It's 15th of August. No, oh God Almighty!
Every
week I do the same thing.
It's quite, you know, we agreed that, you know, because you were the sensible one, you could do the hello, this is, and you do you know, the date and the place. And I don't think you've ever done it right.
Then I shut up after that. It just follows a format, doesn't it? It's just got a format.
I mean, you can't even get the date and the, you know.
No. No, it's the 15th of something. February 2017. I thought yesterday was 2011.
Exactly.
Who knows? But
disastrous.
Mr. Trump's in power. Surrealism reigns everywhere.
Mm.
Yes. Mm. And it's a Gretchen Club podcast. Kate Copstick, John Fleming. We were going to have a special guest because this is our 100th podcast.
But nobody wanted to come and join us.
No, I didn't pull my finger out, let's be honest.
We tried for you. We did just to... so it's not just Sully... his glorious name, we received a lovely, lovely email from Richard Herring.
Lovely man.
Apologising for not having sent an email sooner, but I don't know, he's washing his hair or something. No, but he's very busy.
Well, all the things we said he was busy at doing, he said he's busy at doing, yes.
Which is, you know, we were going to... John is a huge fan of Cameron Moore's... Smut Slam.
Yes.
So we tried to see her. She's gone to Edinburgh to avoid us.
And there was plenty of smut up there.
It's just descended into a pathetic
Trump-esque chaos.
I mean, a sad twosome yet again.
Yeah. Well, what a twosome! Our listening parrot. No, he's in there. Guatemala.
Yeah. You see, you can't even get right.
Well, I've just rushed along the central line. It's not a good thing. Who knows?
What of our listener in Guatemala?
Precisely, what of our listener in Guatemala?
Do you ever hear from him or her? Is it he or she, or is it a Z?
We don't know. But I probably have Guatemala on
my blog. So how do we know we have?
Because I made it up and you've taken it as gospel ever since.
Oh, so we don't even have a listener in Guatemala?
Probably not, no.
Oh, for God's sake, what's the point of this then?
And I don't listen to this.
I mean, this is worse than doing it in Edinburgh to...
There's nothing...
person.
And we got confirmed in Edinburgh today, though, didn't we?
That sounds a bit religious.
Yeah, no, we're going to do the Gretchen Club, hella high water, whether people want it or not.
Not, I would guess.
The 14th to the 27th in the lounge of the Counting House from 2:15 to 3:15. And you were a bit happy about
because,
this.
Well, because...
You were saying it's so much earlier. It's a quarter of an hour earlier than it was last year.
It's just that me, in my capacity...
You've got no capacity.
...such as it is.
Well,
in my limited capacity...
Well, some men have said you have.
As comedy critic for The Scotsman...
Senior.
You know, there's quite a lot of, well, there might be. I don't know. I haven't seen the program yet. But you know, there's usually increasingly people are doing shows simply because there's not enough spaces at prime time. Yeah. People want to do shows earlier, or they're doing more than one show, and I've seen a lot of really good shows round about that 2 o'clock.
Yeah.
So it means that...
But not ours, though.
No, to be honest.
Yeah.
But then we're not exactly... You know, sometimes you would say, well, I fear that perhaps we're pulling audiences away. You know the way they say when Michael McIntyre comes into town during the festival, or when Ricky Gervais did the castle, that, it was absolutely appalling because he was pulling audiences away from other shows that deserved them more. The one thing I think... we can pride ourselves on, John, is that we most definitely do not pull audiences away from anyone in our time slot.
We push them to other people when they see we're appearing.
Exactly, yes. Yeah. Although we are quite, we've certainly in that venue, the lounge at the Counting House, we have quite a few times had people come into the wrong show.
And in fact, last year when we were in a totally different venue,
we
were following someone was doing a show, Caravans or something, and people kept
that. Was it Juliette Myers? I think it was Juliette Myers.
Like that, yeah.
And she was doing, I think she did a show, but it was only for the first week or something.
That's right.
Or...
People were turning up for that for weeks afterwards.
Yes.
So she had a hit show there.
Absolutely, while she was doing it.
No, we got her hit audience.
We should have let her know how successful she was.
And I've never seen, you've never seen the photograph I took of the audience, I think, in the last show where you weren't there.
Was I not there?
I think you'd forgotten that we were doing it.
All right, okay.
And it was chock-a-block.
Given up.
Chock-a-block. There were thousands of people. Thousands.
You see?
Thousands. It's like a Nuremberg rally without the politics.
That's how I can increase the audiences for the Grouchy Club, by not turning up.
Ah.
You see, this is the thing. I've always said, John, it's you that's the draw.
I can't think of a pun. There must be a pun there, but a draw.
Don't do it, John.
I have an
idea about the way forward for the podcast.
No, I've got no idea at all. I was just thinking that it gets a bit dull because we've run out of things not to say. Mm-hmm. Well, the format of the podcast is we start off, I say what date it is, get it wrong,
yep.
And I flounder around a bit.
Yep.
Then I sort of introduce us, although if people read the podcast, you know what it is.
Mm.
And then we flounder around for about 15 or 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Then
nothing much.
Then we get on to comedy towards the end, and we have about 5 or 10 minutes of comedy, or sometimes 30 seconds of comedy, and then it finishes.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to be a comedy podcast.
Yes.
And we never have guests.
Well, don't you think that it could be the comedy's a broad church, John, and our...
So you say church again.
Church.
It's a Scottish accent.
Thank you. Our obvious and long-term failure, really, to address comedy in any meaningful way is in itself comedic.
You think we're being postmodernist?
We might be alternative, John.
Ah.
Do you think we might be alternative?
An
alternative to comedy. I said that before you did.
We have to, I knew
you would say it.
We have to think up some name for all sorts. Well, the weirdos and all those sort of strange people.
Mm.
If there were a name for the comedy they did,
yes.
Then it might take off. But because there is a definite sort of a genre of surrealism that's in the Alternative Comedy Memorial Society and... who we like, and the weirdos, many of whom overlap.
Weirdos are wonderful.
They're all doing a similar sort of postmodernist sort of surrealism, and there's no word for it, because there's no word for it.
Just given it several words, postmodern surrealist.
Yes,
which does sound like a steaming pile of wank, to be fair.
That's post-mortem, yes.
Does sound like a steaming pile of wank.
Post-mortem comedy.
And, you know, to be what the ACMS... do.
You've only seen a half a show of theirs, haven't you?
No, I saw three quarters of a show. And what the weirdos do, I don't think it's the same thing at all, because there's a level of smugness and self-satisfaction about the ACMS. And there's an awful lot of, you know, that whole thing, a failure, a noble failure, all of that. It's smug and it's inward looking. And it's not... I think there's a great, crazy, kind of fearless fun about, like, the weirdos. Not necessarily as a group or as a concept, but individually. And...
Well, they say MS are okay individually.
Maybe it's just when they get into groups that they become unbearable. Because I'm a huge fan of Tom Tuck.
We love Thumb Tuck.
We love Thumb Tuck.
Yes,
excellent,
yes,
funny, yeah. Clever.
Can't spell, but can't like spell
him,
his own name. But
and
know.
Love his work, apart from the ACMS. I mean, the what's-its, the thingy-bobs.
The thingy-bobs and the what's-its. There's a name for a group.
Exactly. On radio. Brilliant.
Penny Dreadfuls.
Brothers Faversham.
Penny Dreadfuls.
Brothers Faversham.
Oh.
Or this time I'll say Penny Dreadfuls and you say Brothers. He can't. He's got a mouthful of chocolate, dear reader, in Guatemala.
These are leftovers from yesterday's live Grouchy Club,
which was excellent.
But they always are.
It was, yeah, but that was particularly spectacular.
Yeah, they always are, because they always assume no one's going to turn up, then they do.
Yep, and I think for both of us, John, that what happens is that the little nuggets of information, there's little starbursts of information. Last night was pretty much, I felt, a supernova of hitherto unknown information, which is that well-known, small but perfectly formed Italian academic and stand-up comic Giacinto Palmieri is a bit of a sex symbol.
He's a man magnet. Everyone's attracted to him.
I think we discovered that the hitherto rock-solid relationship between Matt Price and Martha McBriar, if Giacinto just gave the sign, would be dangling by a thread.
I don't think it would be. I think we're talking about a threesome there.
Do you think?
Yeah.
Giacinto could get awfully squashed. Sorry, there's a ghastly child whining outside. My palms are itching to take themselves across its tear-stained face.
We're in the Mamma Mia Shire charity shop, and she's being charitable.
I am,
by her standards.
I am. You don't have to like,
yes, everyone was lusty after Giacinto.
Yes. Yeah,
extraordinary. I mean, nothing wrong with him.
Yes.
Not to my taste, largely because he's a man.
Even one of our mystery blondes said he was not bad.
Well, no, we only have one mystery blonde. Because you said I made the tea. In fact, Louisette Studel made the tea. And in fact, she posted something on Facebook, which I haven't had time to reply to, saying last night was an education.
Yes.
I'm not quite sure what she was
educating. I think she's had a very sheltered life.
No, I don't think she has, but she's Dutch.
Because what do we have? We have, well...
Amsterdam.
Good point. I mean, what could we possibly teach her? So we had...
On the other hand, I did work in Amsterdam. It was a very dull city. I mean, everything is in Amsterdam. Hardcore sex, international drugs trade, arms trade.
Dare I ask what you were doing in Amsterdam, John?
In my TV hat, I was launching channels, I was.
Good God, tell me more.
This threatens to be very dull.
Well, I think it threatens to be interesting.
Well, having launched channels in Prague for a company whose name escapes me, American Channel Launchers, they then started to launch channels in the lowlands. They were launching about, I don't know, three channels or something from Amsterdam. So I went over to launch the channels.
How do you launch a channel?
Promotions.
All right.
Trailers. So I went over there about three or four times, I think. Had a fight with him, as I always did, and left.
Did you enjoy Amsterdam
no,
to the full?
No, because
John.
I'm the only person who's never been to the red light district. Because I went,
what?
I went to Amsterdam. I thought, well, I'm going to be over here a few times.
Yes.
And as I say, had a fight with him and left. And I was going to leave that till the end, just have a meander around for research reasons, and never got round to it. I left in a huff, or it might have been a minute and a half.
Did you go to a coffee shop?
No, I don't smoke or drink or anything. No.
Couldn't you try?
Nah, not interested. I'm of the 60s. I'm a child of the 60s.
Well, exactly.
I'm exactly the right age, but I never had any non-medicinal drugs in my life.
Never tempted.
Have we had this conversation before?
No.
I didn't smoke cigarettes, because when I was about six, I said to my daddy, "Daddy, can I have a puff of your cigarette?" And he gave me a puff of his cigarette. I, of course, was nauseous. And never wanted to smoke nicotine again. And therefore, because I didn't smoke nicotine, it might sound silly, but it's actually quite difficult to smoke anything else.
No,
You don't know the concept.
Yes, yeah. And there's that kind of hesitation before breathing in when it's fumes. No, I took me a lot of training before I could smoke anything else, and I too am the kind of everyone was smoking dope, and it.
I never saw the appeal. I mean, the only things that ever appealed to me were heroin and acid.
Okay.
And at the time that I would have taken them in Ilford on the edge of London, they weren't really available in suburban London.
No. Why heroin?
Well, but by the time they were available to me, I'd actually seen the effects on other people of heroin and acid, notably Sid Barrett and then the Beach Boys man, Brian Wilson.
Yeah.
So at the time, I would have taken them. They weren't available. When they were available, I wouldn't have taken them, so I didn't. The appeal of heroin was the downside. So I remember having a conversation with a friend of mine who should be nameless when the first anti-heroin adverts came out. Mm-hmm. The sort of man lurking in the corner looking sorry for himself.
Yep.
And she said to me, "That would have turned me on to heroin." And I said, "Yes, that's a very attractive advert. That would turn me on to heroin."
I thought you were going to see a very attractive man.
No. Giacinto. Even Giacinto doesn't turn me. It's the downside. It's the wallowing in filth and self-pity or something was appealing. And acid, obviously, it was the surrealism was appealing. But I thought I was too close to the edge of being a bit dodgy to take acid because it would just tip me over the
edge. Absolutely, yeah. I mean, people were always wandering around with little bits of toilet paper with a smiley face on it. My entire life repressing. I mean,
you've never repressed anything
horror
in your life.
Oh, you'd be surprised, John, but the sheer horror that is in there to come out, which, if unleashed in an unstoppable way, which would just be horrible. Not only could I never come back from it, John, but I suspect that
the world. Anyone,
well, exactly, and knowing me, it would just be awful. I was only ever attracted to, you know, uppers, speed, coke. I kind of still see drugs as something that should make you better. So, you know, faster, sharper, staying awake longer, not unconscious and dribbling.
Oh, that's why Coke's so dangerous, because you think you are faster and thinking faster, and in fact you're just a gibbering wreck. I mean, you're an idiot.
But you get such a little work done.
But it's not as good as you think it is. And you see, because I never drank, I'm not a drinker, I never drank, I'm not interested in drink, I was never interested in being drunk. I just saw marijuana as being a slightly more gentler version of being drunk. Because people would have long conversations, and then the next day would say, oh, it was a wonderful conversation, it was deep and meaningful and philosophical, and I thought, you just gibbered for hours on end and said nothing. Yes. Nothing wrong with that.
But. So, no drink, no drugs, no hard drugs, no soft drugs.
And women are few and far between.
Just in terms of relaxation and sort of enjoying yourself, you must have done a lot of wanking.
No, Basil Brush.
Ah. What? You wanked Basil Brush?
No. A lot of creativity, dear. The creativity came out.
Where did Basil Brush come into the creativity?
I don't know.
With him, you know.
And did you? He was drunk a lot of the time, wasn't he, Basil Brush?
Well, unfortunately...
He's now dead, of course.
Basil Brush will never die, John. Never die. I unfortunately did not meet the original.
Wow.
It was when... was it Matthew Corbett?
No.
Was doing Basil Brush.
No.
Was not doing Basil Brush, but, you know...
No, the original was someone totally different. The original Basil was a drinker, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think, yes. Was it Ivan?
Ivan someone, yeah. Yeah. Ivan the train engine.
Yeah. So I didn't get to meet him, but when Basil's career was revived and he was brought back to the BBC, and it was this little, they gave him a little sort of soap opera with Mr. Matthew. And I always loved Basil Brush.
Basil's wonderful.
Because I feel that if he was real, we could be friends.
It was like a panto. There were always like two levels in Basil.
Exactly.
I remember there was one story where it was...
Boom, boom.
It was in the desert, and he woke up in a tent. And someone said, you know, he said, he'd been knocked on the head. Where am I? Where am I? Where am I? And someone said, the Sheikh's camp. And he said, was he? Oh, and then he carried on with the conversation. And then they were
marvellous.
And so children wouldn't have noticed this happening at all. But it was a joy.
How wonderful,
joy,
yes. But it was very exciting. I got a call from my agent.
Were your hands in use?
My hands were in full view of the cameras at all times. I got a call from my agent saying the series producer on the new Basil Brush series wants you to come in and do one of the shows. I was like, oh my God, that's fantastic, it's wonderful.
One of the shows, you were a guest star.
And I said, do I have to, when's the audition? I'll go and, went, no, it's no audition. I went, but I'd have to read for the part. I went, no, you don't have to read. She says, the director knows you, the director has worked with you, and he thinks you'd be absolutely perfect. And this is wonderful. This is, you know, dream come true. This is what you reckon you've arrived when you no longer audition, but people say, you're perfect for the role, darling.
Even for a puppet.
And so I got the script. And on the front, you know, Basil Brush, blah, blah, blah. He was advertising for new lodgers. Was the story that he needed an extra flatmate, was the story for that week. And then there was the list, Basil, this, that. And then highlighted, in orange highlighter, was my part, for which I was perfect. And she was called Dull Woman.
Miscast, I would have thought.
So that, as my gran would say, put my gas at a peep.
Can you remember your lines?
No, I can't. They were so dull. Yeah. But I remember there was myself and another actor, another actor of the male persuasion. And because you're not allowed to say actress now or actor, it's just so a male actor. And we were dressed in identical Marks and Spencer's clothing, except he had trousers and I had a skirt. But identical, these...
And was he playing booties. Dull Man?
He was playing Dull Man, married to Dull Woman. Identical anoraks, bobble hat. I think we pulled it off. Finar. But that was my claim claim to fame. Obviously, I've worked with the Chuckle Brothers, but...
But did you ask the director why you were so perfect for
them? I didn't. I just felt that my self-esteem wouldn't be able to cope with that. I didn't want to hear the answer, John.
Having talked about low self-esteem, the Chuckle Brothers...
Yeah, they're wonderful.
They are, of course, after my time, so I've never, ever seen the Chuckle Brothers.
Oh, to me, to you. They were just... They're brilliant.
Are they just troopers who've been around forever?
Absolutely, troopers. I mean, there's like 18 of them, and two of them...
There's only two of them?
No. There's actually about 18 of them.
Do they appear?
Not in the show, but for real. No, there's not. I think there's about four of them. Paul and Barry, and then there's...
Barry and Paul.
And there's another two brothers... And they appear when they do panto. The brothers are in panto, but no. There's at least another two brothers.
Well, Chuckle Bros times.
But just as they not part of the TV tube, although they pop up occasionally.
And so, do they have a sense of ironic self awareness of their own
God,
image?
Oh God, yes, yeah, because they're proper, you know, old style, end of the pier, you know, stand and deliver. Comics, and so and they know the value of the catchphrase, they know the value of the comedy value of repetition, they know that, you know, when the guys who wrote the series know the value of the joke that you can see coming from a mile off, you know, and they know that they've got a very young audience, but then they also know they've got a kind of big brothers and sisters, mums and dads audience too, who, and so not quite panto double entendre, but everybody loved the Chuckles, and
So why were you perfect for them? What role did you play, dull woman?
No, I played little old lady. I played little old Scottish lady, little old Irish lady, little old English lady, little old posh lady.
How old were you?
Little old crazy lady. Little old lady who created jigsaws and rode a bike.
How old were you when you were a little old lady?
A little lady, I would imagine I'd be early 40s.
Oh, so only a couple of years ago.
Thank you, John. Yeah. But it was just, and everybody, it was very much a sort of family. Because, you know, there was a few regulars, and then there were people who popped up. You know, and it was all kind of workhorse, proper, right, we'll do a bit of this, we'll do a bit of that, then you'll turn around, you do one of those, and you know that face you do that, and then that thing with your eyebrows, and then to me, to you, they turn, you duck, they turn again, they turn back, you duck again, and so it was like vaudeville. And
so how long were you in it?
Well, there was dozens of series, and I'd pop up in one, maybe two, but usually one episode per series.
Wow.
As a little old lady.
So there's a generation of children and adults who know you as a little old lady.
Little old lady. Everybody, you know, because the cameramen, you know, kind of got into the way they knew... We do this, we do that. There's the comedy close-up on Paul, who does his face, and then the comedy close-up on Barry, who does his eyebrows. And
So if anyone wants a good review from you in Edinburgh, basically they should just do a Chuckle Brothers routine for their
show. Well, no, not unless they can do it as well as the Chuckle Brothers. If they can do it as kind of honestly as the Chuckle Brothers.
But they've got a sort of people... snootily sneer at them, don't they?
Well, people snootily sneer at a lot of people, but the people who snootily sneer are just wrong.
What do these people do?
They snootily sneer.
Oh, no. Do they bimble?
They don't bimble. They snootily sneer. But
the Guardianistas.
Yes, and people who comics. Main, you know, yeah, a lot yeah, of them. Because yeah. If you. They rated, I mean, year after year after year, for all the people that were sniggering at them, there's something, I don't know if they do it anymore, but there used to be something called an AI, which is an appreciation index.
Was it the BBC?
At the BBC. And it was, so you got your audience, you got your viewing figures, so you got 3 million or whatever, But then on top of that, with the BBC, they took something called, you know, the AI. And that, the Juggle Brothers had the highest AI of any show at the BBC for all the years that they were on.
Yeah.
Which, you know, which means, because there are a lot of shows, especially the way the ratings are calculated, that people just go, well, watch a bit of this while we're waiting for something else to come on. Or we'll watch this. Oh, gee, that's dreadful. Fucking hell, what are they doing? That's awful. But the Chuckle Brothers had an audience who specifically tuned in to see them and who loved them and who would go and see them live and who, what, they were a very, very loyal audience.
But there is a sort of bizarre snootiness in comedy where the Oxbridge elite,
oh, yes,
who by and large don't get ratings for their shows, by and large, are very snooty about people who do get ratings. For example, Benny Hill, who at the height of his fame and his rating success and his foreign sales for Thames Television, he must have been churning money out like nobody's business for Thames Television, was dragged into, was it Brian Tesler's office? Someone's office, and told that they were just getting rid of him because he was in bad taste or something.
Yes,
and he was staggeringly popular. I mean, I heard of when he died, I don't know if this is an urban myth, that Chinese television broke into their broadcast to announce it as a news flash.
I'm sure that's absolutely true.
But I mean, he was staggeringly popular, and they didn't like it because they said he was sexist. And,
but I think that I'm going to get a bit political here, John.
Oh, God, we're going to be in trouble.
Only mildly.
Oh, dear.
And fleetingly.
Oh, dear.
Just fleetingly.
I've never stopped it before.
I think that is exactly the same thing as, you know, talking about the Oxbridge elite and all that, running TV. So they see what gets dumped because they don't like it. And they're the ones whose voices are out there. But Benny Hill had gazillions of viewers. I think that's exactly the same thing as we got with Brexit and the Trump vote. And just because the people at the top,
this is copstick,
you know, the people at the top are completely unrepresentative of the, you know, of the mass of the voting iceberg that is underwater. And they somehow, when that the bottom mass of the iceberg rises up and votes Brexit or Trump, it's all, oh, shock, horror, how can this have happened? Well, it happened because it was always there. You just weren't listening to it.
Also, I was told somebody the other day and said in my erstwhile youth, when they had sitcoms, they used to have it on like 8 o'clock or 8.30 at night or 7.30 at night. Nowadays, sitcoms are on at 10.30 or 11 o'clock at night.
Yes.
And the reason is that because in my youth, the sitcoms got massive ratings.
Yes.
And now the humour, the comedy is not getting big ratings because it's being scheduled and programmed and decided on by people who don't like what the public like.
Well, which is why Mrs. Brown's Boys is the highest rated.
And I mean, that is at 10.30, because he keeps saying feckin' or something, doesn't he?
Yeah, but you know, people are very snotty about who Mrs. Brown's Boys.
I mean, I saw one episode and I thought, well, it's not really for me, but it's type, it's well done.
Ooh. And, you know,
I mean, Mrs. Brown's Boys and My Family must be recently the biggest sitcoms on Earth.
Absolutely. And you surely somebody somewhere in some television company must see that.
I mean, there's a lot of Emperor's New Clothes going around. I have to say, Vic and Bob, sorry, I never ever thought they were funny. No, they did do one pilot for, I think it was Granada, which I saw and I liked. It never got made into a series because no one else liked it. But I've never, ever, ever, ever thought Vic and Bob were funny. Not ever. And in fact, they were always in minority slots. And when the BBC, I think, was tried them at peak time on a Saturday night, they came a phenomenal cropper with good reason because they ain't funny. In my populist opinion.
But
what do I know?
I know. I've almost stopped watching comedy on TV because there's very little that appeals to me, that makes me laugh.
Well, also, BBC Three shouldn't be the comedy channel on BBC. Yeah. BBC One should be the comedy channel if they're doing it properly.
I mean, I'm delighted to see the BBC Three got round to recording and showing Louisa O'Malley.
Oh, well,
you know,
yes.
What would Beyonce do? Great, but far too fucking long coming. She did that show in 2012. 5 years to take such an obvious populist hit by somebody who's self-evidently going to come across really well.
Yeah. That would be, is that Louisa Omelan, the Malcolm Hardy Award winner?
Indeed it was, John. Yes, indeed it is, John.
That most likely to make a million quid, wasn't
it? Most
she?
Likely yes, to make a million quid, yeah. And there has been very, very positive reaction to that, although being on BBC Three is never going to make you a million quid, but I feel it's the start of her, I mean, I think it's the lighting the blue touch paper to...
And then we retire.
The, well, not her, to the stratospheric rise of her career. And I think we can rest easy with our listener in Guatemala that we played some small part in that, John.
Indeed.
I really cannot help but feel that being a Malcolm Hardy Award winner, you know, it's a bit of... When the television people are looking and they go, oh... Malcolm Hardy Award winner, eh?
Where would Trevor Noah be now if it wasn't for us?
Exactly. Made him. Does he call? Did he call you? He never calls me.
Where would Dr. Coca-Cola...
He'd be an...
Although he was the main prize. It was the million quid winners we're actually pretty good on. We're pretty sound on.
Yeah, well, Bennett Brandreth. Well, he's undoubtedly more than a millionaire now, admittedly. Not in comedy.
Well, that was discussed at the time, though. We thought, well, he's either going to make it big in comedy or he's going to be a legal.
Well, he already was a legal.
Yeah. But, I mean, I have to say, last year's... We disagreed on last year's million
what
quid award winner, the baby.
Ah, the baby.
That was a rather dodgy logic going on. I always thought that that million quid award was a serious award that you actually were serious about. One was actually serious about it. Whereas last year it was awarded to the baby on the basis that inflation would be so vast by the time it got to adulthood, everyone would be a millionaire.
Well, I think mathematically, John, that's a perfectly...
True, but it was a piss take, though, wasn't it? Own up, own it. It was a piss take.
Well, all right, yes, it was, John. Who else? Who would you have given it to?
I can't remember.
I know who you wanted to give it to.
I can't remember.
Oh, yeah, you wanted to give it to Thing.
Not Thing.
No. What's his name? The shiny floor Irish camp boy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. Yeah, the one where we can't remember his name.
Him.
The new Leslie Crowther.
That's the one, the new Leslie Crowther.
Guarantee he's going to be a millionaire.
I just don't see it. I don't think he's good enough.
Pity we can't bleeding remember the name.
Yeah, we will, John. We will.
Sorry if you're listening to this.
People will... and our listener in Guatemala has got no chance.
Well, he's got his own... Certainly radio series. Possibly TV series in Ireland. Certainly radio series in Ireland.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I saw him on hosting something. And he really wasn't very great.
Really? I think you were wrong. Well, then you didn't like Dr. Hilda McDonald's to begin
with. No, I didn't.
With.
However, I saw him on the little clip that you put online. And I thought... Why didn't I get this before?
Because we've turned your critical abilities, haven't we?
I mean, the one I remember is Rocky 1, Rocky 2, Rocky 3, Rocky 4. Do you think we could persuade him to revive the character?
I think he's in retirement, but I'm not very sure. He used to live in a boat in somewhere like Leicester with his wife. I think they split up and he's now a teacher.
Right, well... I think we ought to get him to come back and do Dr. Coca-Cola McDonald's. I think we ought to get...
He's terribly nice, quiet
Steve,
man.
Steve Thingy to come back and behead some more teddy bears.
Steve. Again, we can't remember the name. Is he head of social work or something in Tower Hamlets or something?
But it can't be as much fun as beheading teddy bears.
And the Wheel of Death, I seem to remember.
Exactly.
Yes.
You see, this is
that's entertainment. That's what the public wants.
Absolutely.
Beheading bloody teddy bears. That's what the public wants.
It was brilliant.
And years before ISIS.
Absolutely. I think that's what we need. I think we need to troll the comedy greats who felt that the world of comedy spat in their eye and sent them home with no party bag.
There was the man who used to eat his brain, who I really enjoyed.
I'd love to see that.
You'd never seen it?
No.
Did you not see it?
No.
This was a man who came on...
Sounds brilliant.
He came on and he was wearing a fez, or fez-like thing, in which side there was actually something like semolina or something like that, or porridge. And he pretended to eat his brain... and as he ate his brain, his various ability to control himself went. So his left arm would go, and his motor actions would go, then his memory would go, and various parts of him would go. And it was simultaneously very, very, very funny and very, very sad, because it was like looking at your own future, getting senile. So it was a senility act with laughs.
I just think it's that. And
someone said he was a psychiatrist or a psychologist. I think he probably was.
What do we have today, John?
Michael McIntyre.
Compared to that.
Michael McIntyre.
Michael McIntyre is not attempting to compete.
You love Michael McIntyre.
I do love Michael McIntyre. Yeah. Michael McIntyre... Oh, except...
And he's populist.
He's very populist and he's brilliant.
And he gets the BBC.
Someone's doing one of these...
Well, they shouldn't have given him a chat show, but apart from that...
Well, you see, I think... Well, I think he'd do the chat show better now.
Maybe. I mean, he was being... The trouble was he had to be Michael McIntyre. He couldn't switch off.
I know, we were talking about that last night at the Grouchy
Club. Yes, because I was saying that the only two people I've ever met who couldn't switch off were Frank Carson, was always Frank Carson, and then Matthew Kelly. Now, when I met Matthew Kelly, I did two or three things with him. He was always Matthew Kelly. I never got through to him. But you know him rather well. You like him. You must have got through to him.
He's just the loveliest human being.
Second loveliest.
Who's loveliest?
Me.
Oh, all right. Well, loveliest equal.
Oh.
And, I mean, he hasn't got a bad word to say about you, you know. So I hope you feel ashamed of yourself. But
I think who is a pretty bad word. Who?
He's highly intelligent, charming. He's just... and
very tall.
He's absolutely... You know, what you see is what you get. It's just... Oh, no, he's just a wonderful human being.
With you, it's Matthew Kelly. With me, it's...
Who?
Names.
Yep.
Redhead, flame singer.
Rula Lenska, no.
No, cancer, death.
Cancer, death. Marty Caine.
Marty Caine was absolutely adorable. She was so nice.
That might have been the world's most depressing game of Give Us a Clue. You know, red-haired singer, cancer, death. Could you just
she
imagine
was
cancer?
So nice.
Cancer, bowel cancer. No, brain, no. Secondary. Oh. Terminal cancer, death. Marty Caine.
No, she said to me, after a certain point, I mean, she only entered showbiz because she couldn't afford, was it the 19 quid for her mother's funeral or something?
Wow.
That was why she entered showbiz. And that's a terrible thing that happened to her all the way through her life. And she said to me that all she really wanted to do, and she wasn't taking the piss, she just wanted to stay at home and be a housewife and hoover the carpet after a certain time. And people would phone her up and just offer a telephone number money to her. They'd say, well, you could have X thousand pounds, and she'd be an idiot to turn it down.
So, why has that never happened to me, John?
I don't know. You know, a red-haired, flame-haired temptress
for
cancer.
I have, however. I did a benefit at Blackpool Grand Theatre.
For whom?
It was a Terence Higgins Trust. Well, it was the local...
Who is Terence Higgins?
He was, one of the very early AIDS patients who...
That's not a profession.
I know. Well, he kind of made it a profession.
Oh.
And the trust was set up in his memory... you know, back in the times when HIV positive people were kind of put in pens and prodded with pointy sticks.
Anyway, Blackpool.
I don't know if it was Terence Higgins Trust, but it was the local HIV charity. And it was just the most fabulous. It was a huge show.
Huge.
Hosted by Ned Sheeran.
Oh, wow. Lovely Ned Sheeran.
And with some really fabulous people on the bill. John Inman was on the bill performing his lovely party piece, Nobody Loves a Fairy When She's 40. And Victor Spinetti was on the bill.
Victor, he's an interesting man.
Oh, I know.
The Beatles and the Cray Brothers. There you go.
Why am I telling you this?
God knows.
What was I talking about?
Listening. I wasn't listening.
Marty Caine.
Oh, God.
Yes. And I was doing a couple of big band numbers, big West Endy numbers from my one-woman show.
Singing.
And there was a proper band on stage. It was all fabulous and glitz and glamour. And I didn't really have a proper glamorous showbizzy frock. So I rented one from Trends. And tried it on. It was fabulous. It was a black one with just kind of a very straight neck, but the neck was all edged in diamante, and there was a slit up the side, and the slit was edged with diamante, and it was fabulous. It was great.
Still my beating heart.
And where I thought, this is it, this is the one. And when we got to Blackpool, and I hung it up, and I saw the name tag in it, and the name tag was Marty Caine. So I've worn Marty Caine's frock.
He's very tall, Marty Caine.
Not as tall as you'd think.
Well, you must have worn it as a sort of full-length thing. She would have worn it as a miniskirt or something.
Oh, thank you, John. No, I don't think she did. I'm beginning to wish I hadn't started this story now. I mean, I did wear heels, and it was right down to the ground, but it was...
Yeah. Well, so it was probably just a vest for her.
Yeah.
So, but anyways, well, we've got to finish this, and you have, of course, put in my mind that the way to finish any sort of community type thing is with a song.
Yeah, but no. Well, what we said, we would throw it open to our public. That's you in Guatemala.
What if he doesn't speak English?
He probably finds this hilarious. Because you want to take a little bit of a break, John.
Well, no, I thought we'd lost our way in this podcast.
Okay.
We should have some other way of doing it, but I don't know what that is.
Okay, so...
And as you're going to Kenya in 2 days' time...
Yes.
For 3 weeks?
3 weeks.
Back in time for the next Grouchy Club Live, yes. Which is the 14th of March.
Yes.
In Mamabia Shara.
Yes.
www.grouchyclub.co.uk.
It's going to be fabulous.
It is. Well, it is.
Because I arrived back on the 13th of March, and so the Grouchy is the next day. I am... going to put the Grouchy into the Grouchy Club.
You're going to be culturally zonked.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Anyway, there's no getting around this. You have to sing a song. There is no way around this.
But if anyone's got any ideas about how we ought to be doing this podcast...
musically.
Then let us know. I mean, we've done... I really like having a third person and quizzing them.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the fact is...
if we're lazy, it never happens.
We're so unpopular, or at least I'm so unpopular, that nobody wants to come along and do the podcast. I think we've exhausted everybody in the world of comedy who's prepared to come along and talk to us.
We could bring Ned Sheeran in as a quiet guest.
He's dead, John.
Yeah? Well...
no, I seem very quiet.
Yeah. Anyway, but you have to finish with a song. We built this up now. You have to finish with a song.
No, you've built it up.
No, it was a one-woman show.
Yep.
What was the opener and what was the closer?
What was the opener?
What was it called, the one-woman show?
It was called Hardly Camp At All.
And was it?
That was ironic, John. Ooh, Hardly Camp At All.
So you were very camp.
So, yes, that was it.
And how were you being camp?
I was wearing skin-tight black latex. And
it was just street clothes then. You didn't wear anything special.
No, it was just smart casual. I saw it. Smart casual.
Smart casual? What?
We did lots. It was lots of parodies of West End show songs.
For example?
You see, they're all... this was in 1922, John, so nobody will remember
all the better.
Any of the songs.
We'll revive it. We'll revive it.
Well, it was at the time... at the time, Jason Donovan was in London.
What was that gag last night? Anyway, carry on.
Jason Donovan was in London, starring in Joseph and his Technicolor Dreamcoat. And there was this rumour going around.
Jason Donovan in...
what?
Carry on.
Why are you nodding at me and smirking?
There was some gag yesterday about Jason Donovan in Joseph.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Oh, that was... that. Now, who was that? That was Mike McCabe, father of Milo McCabe.
We're stealing other people's jokes.
That was funny. Yeah. That joke must have been written about the same time as this, because the rumour was that Jason Donovan was gay.
About the same time you were doing what song?
About the same time as I was doing our version of Any Dream Will Do.
And how does that go?
Oh.
Any dream.
Shows close every day. It's the recession. There was a recession. But there's one exception. Just watch them queue to scream and shout at the amazing Technicolor Jason. He's a screamer too. And it went on in that vein.